Welcome back to Minority Report, a War Machine and Hordes podcast. This is Isaiah.
This is Terrence.
And this is Damon Booker.
All right, welcome back, guys. Another week of shooting another podcast and trying to get out this information to everyone.
Thanks for having me back. I really thought I was getting walking papers in the mail. They never came, so that's great.
Having you back, did you leave?
Savage. No,
sometimes I just don't feel wanted by you, man. That's all.
I can't say that.
Oh, man. All right, guys. Well, starting off our segment, we got some interesting tidbits for new players. Damon, you want to take that away?
Yeah, so, you know, as usual, me and Terrence are talking. Always starts, it sounds like it's a bad joke, but we were talking. And one thing that happened at our last local Steelers event is a buddy of mine from Birmingham, Josh, was playing with a Vulcan. And the rule came up, or the question came up, about use-based models, line of sight, and the ability to fire weapons from their left or right arc. So the rule is, it's just like everything else in War Machine or Hordes, the rule is, but we do complicate it because we are who we are, players. So if you look at page 53 in the Prime rule book, use based models and line of sight, it's pretty simple. The Colossals do have two 90 degree firearms. They have the 180, and that 180 split into two 90 degree firearms, which most have a left firing arc weapon and a right firing arc weapon. So here's the rule, it's simple, and I'm going to keep it that way. You draw a line of sight from the base. So if any part of the base can see a model, that model can now shoot at that model. The arc only means that the model needs to be within that side of the arc for that weapon to actually be able to target that model. So for example, you have a model that has the same size or larger base model in front of it on your right-hand side. However, drawing a line using laser or whatsoever, and you can see it from your left field of fire, you can shoot at that model with your right field arc, which is mind-blowing, right? What is crazy? I mean, I'll be honest with you. I dove into the book, and I didn't have to dive far, and that's where it is. And yeah, there you go.
It's one of those rules that doesn't come up. I mean, it's not really a gotcha moment. It can feel like that. It's just understanding the difference between having line of sight and then being within the field of fire, which can throw off some new players and even sometimes veterans kind of forget that rule in the heat of things. So just make sure that when you have line of sight to the model and they're within that field of fire, no matter what side can see the model, you can be able to make the attack on them. So if the left side can see it, the right side can shoot it as long as you're within that right field of fire.
Yeah, I know the exact same thing happened, not just at that steamroller, Damon, but it happened at LVL. I watched it in a matchup where it happened there too. So, yeah, it seems trickier than it actually is, but it, like you said, it's pretty simple.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You were at LVL.
I was going to say real quick, when I was at, Travis was there. I'm trying to think where I was. M3. I was at M3. What is it? What does that stand for, Terrence?
Midwest Madness.
March Madness?
No, Melee Madness. Miniature Madness. Midwest Miniature Madness.
Guys, this is not a sports broadcast, I swear.
When you put a sports guy in a War Machine course podcast, but I remember I was using that's when my short stint with conversions, I was using a tip. It's a different situation, but it's still the same. I was playing, I don't remember who I was playing against, and he's a pretty good player too from St. Louis. But it was wow, he had models that was in a fort, and my tep was behind a building. So the building itself, center to center, I could not see those guys, but my right side of my tent, which is line of sight, I could see them. And from that same vantage point, they weren't more than 3 inches in the forest. So I'm shooting over the building. Even though I'm going through obstruction, I'm still killing models because I can still see them with a spray. So once again, it's the same premise. You draw the edge of the base from base, but then your weapon does what it does. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, well, as I mentioned before, as Tanner's mentioned, he just got back from LVO, which neither me or Damon could make it out to. I mean, it's kind of a bit past my pay grade getting out to Las Vegas. So, Terrence, how was your trip to LVO?
It went really well. You know, now that you mention it, you know, one of the big reasons I went out there was to face my nemesis, Chuck. And Chuck knows who he is. But he told me he was going to show up, and he didn't show up. So he was dodging me pretty bad. But everything went pretty good.
So what I'm hearing is you were going to lose to Chuck, and you're just happy he didn't show up.
No, I was going to table Chuck.
No, yeah, I heard what you said as well.
But yeah, I mean, it was the event went really well. Me and my wife went with me. We flew out Thursday, got to the venue, checked in, got to see Tyson set up the tables and everything. Everything went great. I signed up for all three War Machine events that was there. So Friday was Champions, and as many of you know, as some of you may not know, I play Minoff. So I had a Serenia list I've been running for a long time, and since I couldn't play High Reclaimer, I switched into a Vindictus list, and so I was playing High Reclaimer, Vindictus in Faithful Masses, and Serenia in Exemplar Interdiction. So Fridays with Champions, like I said, and so my first match actually was against a guy I met. We talked a lot over the weekend. He was playing Rask, and it was pretty much Rask Super Friends. And it boiled down, I think, to it was one pivotal moment where his Swamp Horror went in on my Cinerators and under Serenia's feet, and he ended up killing all of them except one. And so one of the big things that made a difference in that game was the fact that over the course of the game, all the Cinerators eventually came back because I had my list plays with the church, the shrine, I guess. And then, so eventually over the course of the period of time, I just ended up grinding out the game and winning on Scenario. So then my second match was Crucible Guard. I made one crucial mistake, and my opponent made me pay for it. So I was under Vindictus' feet, and I played that feet so many times, and my assumption is that most times he is unkillable on his feet. But I forgot that the Crucible Guard Infantry had the gunshot that they could do that gives them magical gun shots, and between his Vulcan and the Crucible Guard Infantry, he ends up leaving Vindictus on like four boxes. And I am just like, whew. And
man, don't you play this faction? You know, like, knowing these rules.
And I'm telling you, Isaiah, it was literally up. I never thought about it. And then as soon as he moved that first Crucible Guard Infantry guy, I was like, doggone it, those dudes got magical weapons, don't they? And he's like, yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
And he was able to carve out a hole. And I think if he would have went, so he had four infantry guys that could get and take shots on Vindictus. If he'd have took one or two big CRAs and into Vindictus, he probably would have killed him. But instead, he took four individual gunshots. and missed like two or three of them, and ended up. So after that, after the assassination did not go his way, I was able to take my Idrians and the Hammer Dwarves that was in my list, and eventually I took off. I think I took the Vulcan off this turn, a couple of the Crucible Guard infantry, but the biggest thing I think that was a highlight of this whole game is my Paladin of the Order of the Wall was a pure champion. He kept a Rayless Interceptor busy the entire game. It took him three or four rounds to like dismount him.
I hate those models. I love him. He's an amazing solo and he's badass. But God, I hate fighting that model.
I mean, he was moving around and trying to get good angles on him and trying to keep both things, both his fields of fire in the on him. So he had to move and stuff. And so that meant he went down to a rack six. And when Gearhart feeded, I had an infantry guy way at the back edge of the table for my Idrians that he prayed with his feet. So he couldn't bounce it around very much. So I ended up winning that game by scenario as well. And I pushed on to the third round. And for those of you that's never been to LVO, there's essentially three heats. There's a champions event on Friday. There's two masters events on Saturdays. And the top five people from each of those events move on to play on Sunday. So I go into the third round undefeated, and then I see the dreaded Iona matchup. So, and I thought I had it early game, but eventually it just ended up that I did not have it. And essentially I lost on scenario. But then Drock went out to eat, hung out with the wife, just went out and had fun. The next day was Masters. So I actually got to play my actual pairing, which was Serenia and High Reclaimer. I ended up first round dropping Serenia into Signar. It was Signar first round. It was Striker 2. And this matchup is really what the church was designed to do. It killed so many assault commandos. It was crazy. And like, if they didn't tough, or like if they toughed, it didn't really make a difference because I would just get the second shot after they were tough and then kill them and kill a bunch of other dudes behind it. And
wait. You said assault commandos? I thought you were playing in Signar.
What are they? What's the dudes? The commandos? The trencher commandos.
Trencher commandos. Okay. Yeah. Okay, that makes more sense. I was like, assault commandos? That's Kador.
I didn't know they were commandos. And dang. So it really made him have to play against the church. Barely with a range 14 gun. And I think I went first, so it's right outside the zone. So it could shoot the entire distance of the zone. And I placed it on the side of the board where there was one small forest, and so it can shoot between two forests that was out there, but pretty much it was nothing else that could block his line of sight to shooting whatever he wanted to shoot. The clouds didn't make a difference, so it ended up doing a lot of work, and I ended up winning that one on scenario as well. The second round, I ended up playing against Assyria, and the theme that just went through, he was playing Destors, two units of Destors, and the Don Moore. That Don Moore is freaking crazy. And I did not know what I was getting into when I first started the match. And I played Serenia and ended up Serenia got assassinated with the last gunshot. After Gravis, me and Gravis have a love-hate relationship. That dude never kills anything. I've never had him kill a thing ever in the game. I think he's just supposed to stand there like a mortal statue.
Clearly doesn't like you.
He does not like me at all. I put him against, he went in on Assyria, being Matt 10, Pal 13, Webmaster, and did not kill her with essentially four attacks.
I don't think that's Travis. I think that's your dice rolling.
Right? Like, I'm pretty sure Gravis is a monster when he gets there. Like, it just was like, you know what? Terrence is rolling these dice. Nah, I'm done, guys.
That dude hates me, dude. Because I was almost in shock. And that's why I think, like, I never bunkered my caster up because I thought, game's over, right? But no, it was not.
So you just threw it there. You know, you just got cocky. I'm like, I'm going to win this game. And nope.
I think so. I ended up leaving his caster on two boxes, right? But it was just like, I was just so shocked by the aftermath. So I ended up losing that one. So I dropped and joined the next heat. And by this time, it's like, maybe it's like 3 or 4 o'clock in the evening. And I've been up since 7. So first matchup, I played against a guy playing Circle. This time they dropped Wormwood, and I ended up, I pretty much won the match by scenario, but I was so hungry. I dropped, and I didn't want the guy that I was playing to be kicked out by a person that was dropping. So I gave him the win and went to go eat dinner.
It's true sportsmanship. I can respect that.
Yeah, dude, I was starving.
You know, it's one of those things where, you know, we're at a convention, we get up first thing in the morning. The next thing you know, it's like 7 o'clock at night with all the games we play. Dude, we're starving. Like, we're done.
Yeah. So, I mean, that was a pretty much thing. I'm definitely looking forward to possibly going back next year. Tyson and Will were in a great convention. Everybody was super nice. I met a couple guys out there, got to talk a lot about Minoff, which I think kind of renewed my passion about the faction itself. My Serenia list did really well. It only lost at one time, and other than that, it didn't. I never felt like I was in a matchup where it did not have the right answers, so it felt really good.
Okay. And then Damon also had an event he went to. He had a bit of a small local tournament he played in.
Yeah, there was a local event at my local shop, the Game Cave in Hermitage, Tennessee. I think we ended up having 15 players show up. And yeah, man, it was pretty fun. Trying out this year's pairing, at least the first part of the year, which is Hetsy 2 with 3 huge base, 2 Dark Turtles, a Hydra, and what is that? A Hydra? Oh, yeah, 2 Razor Worms and some Beast Handlers, basically. Razor Worms for Arknose, Islasite Arknose, and then Exalted List with Rasheth. My first round, I smoked my opponent because it was a bye. something that we do locally is there's a couple of us who pretty much runs all the events and organize them. We always take the first bye. I mean, if there's a bye, so I had a bye. Second, first game, I played against a great guy from Lexington, Kentucky. He was playing Mercs, and I'll be honest with you, I don't get a lot of burn into Mercs. So I dropped the list that I'm most familiar with, which was my Rasheth list. And it was a barn burner, man. It was insane. I'm right. Yeah, it was insane. For a minute, I thought I dropped my other list because I remember him killing a huge with this caster, but it was the Supreme Guardian that he killed. But at that point, I mean, he was empty, And it was just Reshef sending things into Art Nove through Immortals, killing his caster with ease, because I haven't popped my feet at that time. Second round, I played against my buddy, Tyler Shelton. That's my bae.
Hey, bae.
he was playing Circle.
You got serious problems.
Hey, man. He knows what I'm talking about. There's nothing but love for that guy. Hey, listen. Let me have my bromances. It's funny because Tyler is most Hart's been in the game for a while, but availability hasn't really been there. But that's changed recently, so which we're having. He's playing Circle, and he had Iona, and I don't even remember what the other person was because it didn't. Oh, I think it was Wormwood, but it didn't matter. I knew who he was going to drop. I knew he was dropping Iona, so I knew I needed to drop. Without a doubt, Reshef, and just a couple of highlights. I went first. I just moved up the position. He did the same thing, putting I can never remember the dude's name, so forgive me. But Bridget and Crawl. Yeah, Bridget and Crawl. I was close, and Lorna. They were right there behind a building, but unfortunately, they were all within a 3-inch. Blast template. And just to let you know, if you don't know Reshef has a beautiful spell called Breath of Corruption. So I was able to go around with an immortal, hit Crawl with the Breath of Corruption, catching the Lord of the Feast and Bridget, boosting on both of them, and killing the Lord of the Feast and Bridget in one swoop. And I mean, that pretty much was game, to be honest with you, even though Tyler made me bleed and scratch and crawl for that win. I think we both had less than a minute left in the game, but it was just too hard for him to come back. And then the last game was against Troblos, which if anyone knows me, I played Troblos for many years, and I never cease to amaze me how annoying it is to play against them. I ended up playing against my buddy Davis Messer. Great guy, great player. and he was completely intimidated by my history too. I really believe if he would have played it straight up, he probably could have. But I think he just was waiting for the anvil to drop, and it really never came. But I was able to tie up the middle. The board wasn't really friendly for 3 use-based models, but I was able to tie up the center and put him in a position where he had to charge Madrax in to kill the Hydra, or the Hydra was going to kill Madrax. And to say the least, he wasn't able to do that. So the Hydra ate him the very next turn. The first hit doing a critical grievous, so there wasn't even a tough check that needed to be done. And ended up winning the tournament. And pretty excited, very excited about the pairing. Can't wait to get more burn with him under my belt. Now, Isaiah, you were with an ATC, right? Is that right?
Yep. That was the last major thing I did. Me and Terrence, actually, was ATC my first year. So, got to break myself into that. The guys dragged me out. Had to fight with myself on figuring out what I was going to play. It was either playing Circle or playing Signar. And after a lot of deliberation and Chuck Ellswick poking me and telling me not to play Haley 2 and play Striker 1, I finally decided on Signar. And so my pairing was Striker 1, Heavy Metal, and Siege 1 Gravediggers. That was for me. So I went pretty well. 3-2, first round. I played Trevor. I played Trevor from the Chain Attack podcast. We played first round. He played Sylvestro, and I played Striker 1. He went first. He's super fueled with Sylvester. He had a Vulcan and a Raylist with, if I remember correctly, I think he had Pirates with the ranking officer attachment and Hawk. Like one Trancer. I can't remember what else was in, but pretty much it all ran forward up to engage me. I looked at it and I was like, all right, so I put a ton of shots into the Balingen, leaving it on like
two.
And then I pop feet because I was expecting him to possibly, if he wanted to, move up Sylvestro to pop purification to get rid of all my arcane shields. But that may have put Sylvestro in a not so happy place on the board. So he ended up charging with his battle engine to try and do some damage. I think he did scratch the paint a little bit on a few of my models. He backed up his Vulcan to take some more pot shots. So I ended up next turn destroying the battle engine and the Vulcan. And then after that, I kind of just stayed a big bully, pushed aggressively into him. I think I ended up winning on scenario.
So then, you were able to get the Vulcan even though he backed it up?
Oh, yeah. So for those who don't really deal with the Signar shooting, we can do a lot of damage and shoot a lot of things off the board. Because I think my first Balogun just kicked the his Balogun to death. And then I put four boosted power 15s and then two boosted power 16s into the Vulcan. Just taking it off the table. And then, yeah, I just jammed everything.
You took it off the table with four shots?
Six shots.
Okay.
So, four boosted 15s and two boosted 16s. I think, you know, I actually think I had the Firefly within five as well. So, four 17s and then two 18s all boosted. And then, I think I also put my small power 13 AOE shot into it too, but once I took the Vulcan off, pretty much his heavy hitters were gone, so I just jammed everything into him and he couldn't, you know, break through the armor. Then round two, we played the Magic Mike team. I can't remember my opponent's name for the life of me, but he was a great player. I actually think he went 5-0 for the event with him playing Scorn. I ended up dropping Siege, which, after thinking about it, in hindsight, that was a very bad idea on my part. And he played Mikey to 3. So I tried to kind of focus my sight on not killing any of the Immortals to give them vengeance. So I went to blow up a Supreme Guardian, hopefully like to take out one Supreme Guardian and take out the other one, and then just push as aggressive as I could, but I wasn't able to do it, and he's able to pretty much get in there and overrun me, because once all my stuff's engaged by the Supreme Guardian, there wasn't really much I could do at that point. So I ended up losing that game. I think I lost it on Assassination. I lost on Assassination. Makita actually came up and gear-winded me twice to death. So that was that game. Then round three, we ended up playing the Line of Sight podcast. Once again, I can't remember my opponent's name, so I apologize. But he was playing Circle. He had Kruger 2 and Wormwood, if I remember correctly. He didn't have Kruger 2. The other player who also had Circle had Kruger 2. Yeah, he had Grail and Kruger 2. He had Wormwood and someone else, but I ended up fighting Wormwood. I dropped Striker because my initial plan was I can feat early, so hopefully he can't break through armor with Stranglehold. And then once I get into the zones and stay there, him trying to remove me, he has to put, you know, a lot of things into me, and hopefully I can weather the storm and start taking out his models, which didn't happen as planned, so I ended up losing on scenario in that game. I was a little sad about that one, but it happens. Round four,
Wormwood will do that.
What's up?
I said Wormwood will do that to you.
Yeah, he does. I mean, like, I play Circle, too, and Wormwood is just one of those things where either you can respond to him or you can't. Round four, we ended up fighting pretty much a group of new players who, like, they were relatively new. I think some of the guys started playing, I think they said, like, a few months back, or some are returning players who haven't played in a while. But the area wasn't far, so they decided to sign up and play in the ATC. So our guys had a, you know, fun game with them. You know, we talked them a few things. And they all enjoyed themselves. We laughed about a bunch of stuff. So I ended up winning the round, but ultimately, you know, we just had fun with the guys and talked with them and kind of share some stories. So it was fun. Then round five, we fight Will Pagani's team, which was hilarious. I end up fighting Trevor from Chain Attack, who's also playing Sylvestro.
Jay.
Why? Yeah, because I fought Trevor first round. So I fought Jay final round, who's also playing Sylvestro. And once again, I play Striker 1. And Trevor came over and was like, yeah, that's the guy who destroyed me round 1. I was like, I didn't destroy you. We had a good game, right? So this game went pretty similar, except for I just straight blew up the Balogun bottom of 1. And I took out half the Vulcan, also bottom of 1. I then moved up everything, feed it, of course, bottom of 1. He then put transmutation on the Vulcan, charged. He just walked up, because I think it was just close enough, to the storm wall, to the hurricane. And I think he left it on, like, I think 10 boxes. Something like that, but he wasn't enough to kill it. So then next turn, I kill the Vulcan, I kill his Toro, and I just push aggressively into him. So then Jay decides to go for the assassination. And I was hoping I was going to be like super safe where he wasn't going to try it. Not safe enough. So he walks up with Sylvestro. Does his free spell purification to get rid of Blur that was on Striker. He then arcs a Stygian Abyss into Striker. Wasn't able to crit. Did some damage. The Dragon Breath Rocket also hit Striker, dropping his armor some. Just a little bit of damage. Then the Vindicator stands still, shoots Striker. Hits, he needs to roll a boosted 14 to win the game, and he rolls a 12. So Striker lives with 2 hitboxes, and the next turn I'm able to just kill out Sylvestro and win the game. So all in all, went 3-2. Had a lot of fun. We did have a fun experience watching Will Pagani's game in our last round. So he was facing Paul, and Pagani's playing Child with a bunch of Skin and Bones, and Paul decides to send in 4 heavies to kill a single Skin and Bones and fails to do it. Then Pagani then has the single Skin and Bone that survived kill all but one of his heavies. He killed 3 heavies with just the 1 Skin and Bones. So in Paul's kind of retribution, he sends his 1 Nomad in, needing 8s or 9s to hit. And for every single attack and damage roll, he didn't roll lower than a 9. And this 1 Nomad was able to kill the Skin and Bones that 3 heavies couldn't do the previous turn. It was really funny. We all just die laughing about it. Paul lost, but it was just hilarious. Like, we have been kind of making so many jokes about it. It was great. We were taking bets on like when he would finally miss, and we were just completely wrong.
Hey, with a dice on the side, who needs strategy?
Paul's initial strategy was like kind of great, and just all failed. And Pagani's like, I'm just gonna kill everything. And then Paul's like, retribution. I mean, he gets a slight medal, just didn't win the game. So. But, yeah, we had tons of fun, tons of laughs, met new people, definitely enjoyed it. Thank you, Travis, and everyone for, you know, running the event. It was great. James, do you have any big moments from ATC?
Nope. Well, I've been before, and I have a great time every time. Travis and Nathan do a really good job on the con. It was freezing cold though. I managed to get out just in the nick of time before I got stranded in freaking Wisconsin.
Yeah, the drive there was horrible for us. Like, we hit some major snowstorm and we couldn't see like 5 feet in front of us for like 3 hours. Lucky enough, it finally broke and we were doing okay from there. But yeah, it was freezing that entire weekend. Oh my God.
Yeah, I flew, and I think on Facebook, I don't know who it was, but somebody got stuck in the airport for like a couple of days.
Oh yeah, I remember hearing about that. I don't know exactly who.
It was Gonzo, but I don't know if it was or not.
Oh, you know, it was Gonzo on the way back home.
Yeah,
that's what it was. It was Gonzo on the way back home because he ended up missing his flight because of the layover. Like, he had like 20 minutes in Atlanta to try and make a super, which in Atlanta, that's horrible. Because, like, trying to get from one side to the other in Atlanta, which is, like, the biggest airport. Yeah, the biggest airport in America. Yeah, good luck with that. that's not going to work.
Hanging out with John Gavin from Gigabyte's Cafe for the whole night. So, I mean, it might have sucked a little bit, but I'm telling you, there's nothing better than Crocodile Man John himself. I'm telling you.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, ultimately it worked out for him, which is great. Great to hear. I know we had a slight scare when we got to the hotel because we booked two hotel rooms, and our other guys somehow their reservation didn't go through, even though they paid for the room. So we were initially worried that because they didn't have any rooms left, so we initially worried about what we were going to do with them. But somehow my room, which I booked after them and they did have the reservation for, I got this like super like suite where there was like 5 beds. So it worked out where we all just got in the one room and just made it easy. Yeah, that was a bit of a scare.
That's cool.
So, yeah, it just worked out. But yeah, we'll definitely be back next year. For my first time, I enjoyed it, and it's not far. It's a 5-hour drive.
I'm hoping next year to go. This year is Terrence Snow. Man, I I was on a team, off a team, on a team, and then off a team. So next year, I'm coming with my own team. I'm just not doing it.
That's fair. Yeah, we'll kind of work it out. We'll make a minority report team. We'll make it work. We'll get the team together, and we'll win.
That would be awesome. I'm curious. You know what? Never mind.
I don't know. We'll win just as long as Terrence doesn't hold us back, as usual.
What? I'm the superstar on this team.
What? I think we need to start praying now. By Isaiah, now. We need to start praying now. That gives us
I know. We got to start getting these reps in now. So
what? If you guys don't mind me asking, since I've never been to ACC, give me the biggest pro of attending a large team tournament like that.
Man,
no, that's an interesting question. So I always like team tournaments generally because it's just not on you, right? It's a team effort. You got to communicate. You got to talk to each other. But you get to see a lot of people, meet a lot of people, and ultimately, it is probably one of the most that's like fun and relaxing cons you go to a year.
So yeah. So the cool thing about ATC, especially playing like team events, a couple things come out of it. First, when it comes to you yourself bringing lists, you don't have to like prep for everything. You can actually be kind of skewed into being really good into one thing, but not having an answer for something else. Like for me, like I didn't want to fight Kruger 2. I told my team I am hard dodging Kruger 2 every single time. So if there's someone on the team that has a crew or two, do not put me down. No. So so you can like bring a very skew list and still have a game into a lot of things. And if there's something you need to dodge and your team can work around it, you know, during the pairing process, you guys can dodge it, still have a good game. But you don't have to, you know, bring two lists that deals with everything. You can be a little bit more relaxed on your list creation based on, you know, what the team needs.
Yeah, I mean, ATC is a place where you can actually let your snowflake fly. I mean, yeah. If your team's okay with it, you can bring in all this stuff that you love to play that really ain't the strongest thing. Like, you can bring your B list to ATC and it does well.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would definitely agree with that. So, so now that we had, you know, LVO done, ATC done, so the meta's been talking a lot about the new big things. So, like, for example, at ATC, the old big dogs, Krix and Signar, was almost nowhere to be seen. I was one of five lonely Signar players at the ATC, and Krix also took a dip with Scorn and Circle being the new top dogs of the current meta, per se. So what's your guys' thoughts on the current rankings, I would say, quote unquote? Damon?
I mean, listen, I'm a true believer that I think the players should make the meta. I believe that, you know, a lot of people feel that Sidnar and Chris are not as formidable as they used to be. I think the builds that were formidable are no longer that, but the factions still stand pretty doggone strong. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, Isaiah, but I just really feel that once again, when people get out of boxes and stop trying to look for the auto win, and you know, there's a sweet spot between the snowflake and the net list, and find those. Within the fashion, I mean, all the sieges are good. I think all the Haleys are still good, even though, you know, I know some have problems with Haley. And then there's some sleepers that I think people just don't look at. I think Mattis could be a pretty incredible caster, in my opinion. And listen, we're not going to even talk about Chris. Chris, by far, is still one of the most formidable forces out there. I think the Slayer list is still viable. I just think their pairing needs to be a little bit more versatile. But you know, yeah, this part always makes my head break, and I'm done.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing with the meta ever is usually, first off, it's the new shiny. So, like, you know, all the Circle stuff is out. Scorn got, you know, their big update change. So everyone's pulling them out because, you know, no one really played Circle and Scorn as heavy as before. Until, you know, the new CID and these new models came out. So new strategies can be built. So, like, Exalt is being super played. Tharn is now being played outside of Bones. So you have all these new things that are coming out, and people are, you know, playing with the new shiny. And I think that's what it is more than anything, that people have been playing against Krix. Well, you know, playing against Krix and Signar and playing with Krix and Signar so much that people just want something different. So I feel like it's just not so much that a power level shift, it's just mostly just there's finally new kids on the block that people want to get their hands on, try, experiment with. Because after a while, once all the stuff is, you know, put on the table and people have played it against a bunch, there's some answers for those too. So I know a lot of people, the big thing people talk about, especially with Circle, is, you know, Lord of the Feast, how as a 6-point motto, he just decimates many, many lists and is just a giant bully that a lot of people kind of don't know exactly how to answer.
Yeah, I don't know, you know, the meta is kind of weird right now. You know, it's shifting all the time, and I understand why the Circle and Scorn at the top, you know, their most recent CIDs. But you mentioned Lord of the Feast, and out of all the models that's been through CID, he's the only one I think that's maybe probably a little bit too strong. But I think eventually we'll come up with some answer, like Damon said, right? We'll come up. I think the meta will come up with some answer to answer. I mean, the especially as a Minhawk player, the is most he can kill any Minhawk caster in the world that he wants to hit. And at the end of the day, the he negates your shield guard, and that's the only thing I think that is the biggest problem.
Yeah, that's fair. Well, I mean, like, the other thing is, if I can't remember off the top of my head, I don't think his bird is, like, magical. So, if you say no magical shooting, non-magical shooting against your jacks, he can't target your jacks.
But they have the shaman who can walk up and just give him magical weapons, and they can give him Wraith Bane, I think. Or, like, I mean, Circle got plenty of ways of making his gun magical. The thing is that, you know, it used to be you could shield guard him away from your caster, right? But now, because he has a 2-inch melee and his base size, if you shield guard him just once, he still kills your caster. So you have to shield guard him and not give him a landing space where he can kill your caster. Which right. Now is he's tying up not just your shield guard, but other models in your list to try to deal with one essentially free model in your list.
That's fair. And that's, you know, something that the community has to find a way to play against. But as I said before, with him being, you know, the new upgrade, the new shiny, he's going to be played a lot. And, you know, after a while, people are going to figure out how to deal with him efficiently. Who knows, he may get touched up in a future CID or update change. But I think right now he just, he is very strong. There's no doubt about it. But I think it's going to come to the players on figuring out a proper way on how we can deal with him in particular, along with, you know, like the Iona list or the Wormwoods and stuff like that. And then with Scorn coming up, you know, Machia 3 just being really good, coming in with Insight, Grievous Wounds for a battle group, and just being much better than her old iteration. Also with Immortals being much better than they were before, being cheaper. Bringing more units to the list, along with Supreme Guardians. It's definitely a interesting matchup. It's definitely winnable. Like, despite a lot of people complaining about the matchup, these matchups are winnable. It just takes knowledge of the list, what you can bring to help fight against it.
I don't think anything is unwinnable.
Right.
At the end of the day, I think, like you said, right, you just got to bring the right tools or... you know, maybe just go into it and go deep in that jank tank and find out what you can do. And I think as you just get practice and burn against certain lists, right, you'll find a way to beat it.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, also we still have, you know, since you played Menoth for these events, how do you feel about, you know, the strength of the Judicator? Because, you know, Judicator was something that was super complained about. You know, with how strong it was, you know, with HR, you know, doubling up with his reliquary and Hand of Fate. But in all honesty, I don't hear like a overabundance of talk of that anymore.
Yeah, I think the initial shock of the Judicator was really out there, but like he's still rat one. He still needs dice. I mean, yeah, you can dice fix it to some point where he can start. I mean, look at what you have to do to make him so you start hitting accurate, right? You got to bring Sevi Zero. So that's a free, that's 6 points or a free point slot, however you want to look at it. You got to bring Errants. So you have to have the Errant UA, which is, so right there, that's 20 points so that you can do mark the target, have them within three. And the only thing that does after you did all that for 26 points is essentially you took your 35-point Colossal, and you made him rat four.
Terrence, you lost all credibility. When you, said, you know what I mean? Like, all credibility when you said, quote, unquote. I mean, it's dice, you know, it's Adjudicator, you know, you still got to roll dice, but you're rolling four dice and choosing the two that you want. Oh no! You had your piece. I gave you a soapbox, and I heard the crocodile deers hitting your desktop. You were talking. Now you want to hear me out. Listen, I do agree that the double judicator list has kind of went to the bat side, but the Judy by far probably became the best Colossal in the game after their rehaul. And yes, I mean, you're going to take Sevy Zero anyway, because guess what? He fits more than just the judicator, right? So well, I'm not crying tears there. The errants, okay. I mean, you're going to take them in anyway because they're awesome with Satpon and their ability to do damage out. And then you can put Hand of Fate on them, and then they can really hit like Matt Truss. So I'm not going to cry there. So really, what you did is you spent 26 points to make a Minoff list that can kick teeth down people's throats.
Well, now that you mentioned that, I don't play with any of those things. Any of those.
That's right. We are special snowflakes. We don't. We play to our own personal lists. So if you don't play with any of those things, what do you play in your list, Terrence?
Now, I do the double Hand of Fate thing, but I typically play my High Reclaimer list in Faithful Masses. And I think I just have a problem, I guess, in my own head running double exemplar lists. And I think the Faithful Masses, even though it is by far been our second best theme, I think it still has a lot of gaps and stuff, but the overall, I think they pair together really well.
Okay. So right now, so I guess the thoughts in the meta is that we have Circle and Scorn kind of on top with Minoth like right below them, because of course the strength of Hand of Fate, double Judy. I saw Sirenia with double Judicator, which was kind of interesting. But you know, Judicator is definitely still that right now, I guess, centerpiece that a lot of Minoth players are utilizing. Then after that, it kind of falls down to Crix, and then obviously after Crix, it's just a mingle of everyone else. You know, one thing I also don't hear a lot of talk about is, I know Chris McGarrett's still new, so people are slowly playing it a little bit more. But Kador, I haven't heard much on the Kador front in a long time.
The CID just released.
I think that's timing. I think probably what the next con is, what is it, Ontario? Is that the next one? Whatever the next event, I believe you're going to see a larger footprint of Kador. I mean, with that new theme, is bonkers.
Doom Reavers, right?
Yeah, the Doom Reavers theme is just incredible. And once again, it gives you the feel of like the Exalted in the I can't even think of the name of it, but the Circle theme, where it just
threats
far. The Tharn, yeah, it threats far, it hits hard, and it's resilient. So I think Kador is about to really hit the table a lot. Shoot, I know a couple of players in our meta who's about to make the switch. At least one. I know one at least is about to make the switch himself.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that Kador has been waiting on for a long time, and I think that changes Kador immensely, is Sorcerer Zero. She will, I think, even more than Sevy Zero changed Minoff, I think she will change Kador. Because... Oh my God. For casters like Parshev that don't have access to Boundless Charge, she is going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Hey, what's the guy? She existed.
What was that, Damon?
Was she at LVO? Was she purchased?
No, she wasn't. I mean, if she was, I had like six people ask me to pick it up for her.
Well, yeah, because they had Garrett too and some of the other stuff. Yeah, I forgot all about you. So yeah, so once she comes out, Kador has access to Boundless Charge and a stick. Yeah. That would definitely open up some things. Yeah, that'd be very interesting.
She should be at Adepticon, I think.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Okay. Well, I am definitely hoping to see more Kador on the battlefield, because I love a lot of their casts, a lot of their models. And sad to not see more of them being experimented with and, you know, put out there more. But of course, you know, the new shiny is usually what everyone kind of gravitates to initially, and then after about a few months, people drop off and go towards the next big shiny.
Yep. Well, I guess as we approach the end, Isaiah, you got anything else you want to wrap up with?
Well, right now, there's nothing going on right now in my local community. We are going to be getting events ready at Pandemonium Games and Hobbies coming in April with a Dreaming League and possibly a welcome back tournament for, you know, us getting ourselves back into the groove of things since things at our store have been kind of pushed behind with issues with the storefront itself physically. So I'm hoping to kind of get things back up and running, get the local community involved more than we have. We just changed up our game nights from Wednesdays to Thursdays to accommodate people via with work and traveling and everything else. But more info about that will be released soon, hoping. Damon, anything else new for you?
Yeah, just a correction. I know I said I thought Ontario Open was the next major con. I was very wrong. we have the Intermountain Cup in Idaho, I think it was like Seattle Open and Bellevue, Washington, and of course Adepticon in Illinois. So for me, it's just all about preparing for Adepticon. I really didn't have a great showing last year playing a faction that I was on the tail end of getting out of and didn't have a passion for it. But I'm back home. I'm retiring again, and I'm looking to make my name known even more. Yeah, that's it, man.
All right, so Damon's name will now be the man who does slightly better than Terrence. Got it.
Absolutely.
So, Terrence, anything more on your front?
Similar to Damon, just getting ready for ATC. I mean, Adepticon, not ATC, but also I'm doing at the local game shop here. It's the Seller Tabletop Games and Comics here in Memphis, Tennessee. I'm doing a demo day here this Saturday to try to get the meta built up here. As I prepare to go to, I think I got OTC before I have Adepticon though.
All right. Well, I think that will wrap it up for this episode of Minority Report. Thanks everyone for listening. And once again, you guys can catch us on our Facebook group. If you guys have any critiques, criticism, or questions you guys want to ask us, please let us know. Hope to catch you next time.
Peace out.
California.